Hey, I'm so glad that you're here this morning. So glad that you made it out. And we are at week four of this series that we are in right now, going through the book of Romans, Paul's letter to the Christians living at Rome in the first century. And what we've been discovering since we began this series a few weeks ago is the things that Paul talks about, they're things that we are wrestling with in our lives today as well. So these are timeless truths. There's wisdom that Paul has, or that Paul had 2,000 years ago, but it's wisdom that endures. It's wisdom that guides us in our lives today. Now this morning, I want to talk about another one of the big themes found throughout the book of Romans. We looked at a big theme last week, and today I want to look at another theme that shows up all over the place in this letter, and it's the idea of judging, the idea of judging others. Remember, I said these were enduring truths. Has judging, the act of judging others, has that disappeared in our world? Or is it still something that we as humans struggle with in our lives today? For Paul, he seemed to believe that judging was one of the biggest things that tore community apart. Judging, it tears each other apart. It tears apart the community, the friendships, the shared life that we all have together. So if we remember back a couple of weeks ago, one of the reasons why I said Paul wrote the letter was because he wanted to promote unity. And I read this verse, but I want to read it again. It's Romans chapter 16. Verse 17, I urge you, brothers, to watch out for those who cause divisions and put obstacles in your way that are contrary to the teaching you have learned. Here's his advice for everyone who causes divisions. Keep away from them. Could he be any more clear? I mean, think about the world that we live in today. Could we use some of this advice? Could we use some more people who are willing to bring together? People who are willing to set aside their differences in order to promote unity, peace, the common good for all people. I mean, every single time I turn the TV on, it seems like there's another person who's causing divisions. We could maybe call them home wreckers. There seems to be more and more home wreckers these days. And Paul's advice is, hey, here's what I want you to do. People who are creating a larger gap, people who are creating a rift, who are causing a division, who are taking away the peace and the unity that we all desire. I mean, is that not something that we all want in our lives? More peace, more unity. And Paul's advice is keep away from all those troublemakers. Keep away from the home wreckers, the people who, you ever meet that person and it seems like their main goal in life is simply to tear apart? Now, granted, there are certain things that need to be torn apart. There are things that have to be dismantled, but you can't leave it there. You have to do the tearing down, but then you have to do the building back up as well. And Paul's talking about people who simply want to tear down. And he says, there's so much more to life than simply tearing down. There's a building back up as well. So if anyone simply wants to tear down, Paul's advice, stay away. Look for the people who are promoting love. This is the teaching of Jesus, is it not? At the center of the message of Jesus, of who Jesus was, of what Jesus embodied, was love. Love for all people. Love for God, which how do you love God? You love God by loving others. And Paul says, hey, the main thing I want you to remember is love. And if anyone is forgetting that truth, if anyone is walking away from that path, steer far, far away from them. And this idea of judging seems to be one of the main ways in which the divisions are showing up in this community. Let me give you a little background of the Christians living at Rome at this time. In 49, Common Era, there were disturbances by the Jewish population living in Rome. So the emperor at the time, Claudius, he said, you know what? The Jewish population, you are to be expelled from Rome. So we know that at least some of the population, some of the Jewish population, would have been expelled from Rome in 49 CE. That would have included Jewish Christians, Jewish followers of Jesus. There were disturbances in the city because of someone named Crestus. And as a result, Claudius said, I don't care where you go, but you can't stay here. Get out of Rome. So right before Paul writes this letter to the Roman Christians, there's a new emperor. There's a new sheriff in town. It's the emperor Nero. And Nero, he wants to show his goodwill to all people. He wants to show how benevolent he is, how merciful he is. So he forgets this edict. And he allows everyone who had been expelled under the former emperor to now return back to Rome. So at this point, right before the writing of the letter, all the Jewish Christians, the Jewish population, they are returning to Rome. If you're a follower of Jesus, if you're a Jewish follower of Jesus, and now you're returning back to Rome, what you are going to discover is that the non-Jewish followers of Jesus have sort of taken over the show a bit. One of the points of tension throughout the letter is there are Jewish followers of Jesus, and then there are Gentile or non-Jewish followers of Jesus. They have a completely different background. Their lives have been shaped by a whole bunch of different rules and laws and ways of being in the world. So there was some tension initially about how do we follow Jesus, but now when one part of the population, one group is kicked out, they come back, they discover that things have changed a bit. Things are different. And now it's the non-Jewish population who is deciding how the church is going to be run. It's the non-Jewish population that is now saying, here's what we believe it means to follow Jesus, and anyone who disagrees with us is wrong. Do you see how this could create some tension? Imagine that. You go away for a while. Imagine we have our community here at Awaken, and half of you leave. You come back 5-10 years later, you think everything's going to be the same, and you come to realize, whoa, Ted has taken over, and Ted is now enforcing everything that he believes about what it means to follow Jesus. There would have been quite a bit of tension. There would have been some arrogance, would there not, on the part of these Gentile Christians, these non-Jewish Christians. Because throughout Rome, the Jewish population, I mean, they were the scorn of the empire. I mean, here's people who had been expelled. I mean, think about the lowly position they would have held. Now they're staggering back into Rome, and they're going to feel like they don't have much power. They're going to feel weakened in their status. So what Paul is writing throughout Romans is he is trying to give them a picture of how to live in community. He's trying to give them a vision for how do we, the Jewish and non-Jewish Christians, how do we live together as a family? How do we do life together? He's offering some advice. How is it that we can unite together? How can we set aside our differences? And yes, there are quite a bit of differences, but how can we set those to the side so that we can be a family together, living out the center of the message of Jesus, love for one another, and love for everyone, even those outside of our community? I mean, this is the central theme of Rome. I would argue it's the central theme of the Bible, but this is what Paul is talking about. How do we live together as a family? Here's a couple places where this idea of judging shows up in Romans. Romans chapter 14. Accept him whose faith is weak without passing judgment on disputable matters. This might be one of my favorite verses in the Bible. Oftentimes, when we are handed a Christian worldview, we're told there's black and white. We're told there's no gray. And the point of the Christian religion is to eradicate all the black and white. What Paul is saying is, hey, there's a lot more gray here than you care to accept. There's a lot more There's many more gray areas to following Jesus. As he puts it, there are some disputable matters, which means we are not going to all agree on everything. And Paul seems to think that is okay. Paul seems to be okay with living in the gray. I mean, we live in a world where we do everything we possibly can to eradicate tension. Because tension, disagreement, it's bad. But what Paul is saying is, hey, the tension is actually a good thing. It promotes conversation. It promotes dialogue. It allows us to hear other people's perspectives, where other people are coming from. And maybe together, maybe if we were to have these conversations, have these dialogue, in order to talk about the things that we disagree on, and if we allowed love to be the thing that permeated those conversations and to be the bedrock, to be the foundation upon which we lived our lives, then maybe we would actually come to some greater depths of agreement. Or maybe we would still disagree, but at least it would all be bathed in love. I mean, is that not something that we should be keeping at the front of our minds over the next couple of weeks as we move forward on this roller coaster of an election year? What if all of our conversations, all of our disagreements were bathed in love? I mean, think about the world. Think about how much different the world would look. Think about how our country would look if we allowed the disputable matters, the gray areas, to exist, and we were okay with them, but we allowed love to be the thing that covered over all of them. And then Paul continues here, verse 2. One man's faith allows him to eat everything, but another man whose faith is weak eats only vegetables. No, Paul is not talking about veganism. All right, there's other things going on here. The man who eats everything must not look down on him who does not, and the man who does not eat everything must not condemn the man who does, for God has accepted him. Clearly, there are some lifestyle differences. There are some lifestyle choices, and Paul seems to think what they're doing, it's okay. What this group is doing, it's okay too. And then I love this verse. Who are you, this is verse 4, to judge someone else's servant? It's brilliant. Is that not brilliant? Who are you to judge someone else's servant? To his own master, he stands or falls. And he will stand, for the Lord is able to make him stand. What Paul seems to be saying here is when we are passing judgment on another person because we disagree with their lifestyle choice, we disagree with how they're following Jesus, we set ourselves up as the master. We're taking the place of Jesus. When we begin to pronounce, to condemn others and pronounce judgment on other people, instead of entrusting other people to God, we are now claiming to be the master. And we're placing everyone else below us in an inferior position. We're setting ourselves up as the superior person because, well, we know best. Our way of thinking is the best. And Paul's like, no, we're not going to do that here. No. Doesn't help. Doesn't promote unity. Entrust this person to God and entrust that the Spirit is leading this person just like the Spirit is leading you. A couple more verses. 15, verse 1. We who are strong ought to bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves. Now, if you want to take a whole deep dive into the weak and strong and what scholars have said about which group is which, find any good commentary and you'll be able to just jump into the debate that has been going on for a very, very long time. But basically, right here, Paul says we should not please ourselves. Humility. Humility. Live a life of humility. I mean, elsewhere in Romans, Paul talks about putting the needs of others before our own. A life of humility. Is that not what we see exemplified in the life of Jesus? A life of humility. Here's a couple more. Verse 14, just to show you how important judging is, or how important not judging is for Paul. 14, verse 13, therefore, let us stop passing judgment on one another. Paul cannot get any clearer. 14, verse 22. So whatever you believe about these things, and Paul's talking about different lifestyle choices, the day in which you recognize to be Sabbath, the idea of whether you have to be circumcised or not, dietary laws. He says, whatever you believe about these things, keep them between yourself and God. Everyone doesn't need to know about it. There are some things that are simply between you and God. There are some things that don't need to be shared on social media. You know what I'm talking about? Right, can anyone else agree with that one? Right. Some things better left to yourself. Some things that will promote division and cause rifts, and they're not helping our shared life. They're not helping us move forward in our faith. Keep them between between yourself and God. Blessed is the man or the woman who does not condemn himself by what he approves. Now, at the heart of judging, I think this was true in the first century, and I think it's true for the 21st century, is the idea of boundaries. When you begin to judge and you begin to say, this is okay and this isn't okay, what you're doing is you're creating boundaries and you're saying who is in and who is out. And, I mean, we all know how this works, right? Whenever we create boundaries, we always happen to be in the in-group. It's funny how that works, right? We're always in and everyone else is always out. We're always the ones in the right. Clearly, our thinking can't be wrong. But at a deeper level, you know what this is saying? At a deeper level, when we begin to judge and create boundaries, we're actually saying who has access to God and who doesn't have access to God. When we begin to judge, we're saying our group has access to God, but the other groups, others who don't think or look like us, they do not have access to God. I mean, this is a position of extreme arrogance. It's only our group who has access to the divine, and everyone else, it's our, what we're to do in life is we're to now allow access for others. But isn't the divine accessible for everyone? I mean, when I think about the church today, unfortunately, I don't feel as if we have moved very far from this way of thinking. Research shows that how is it that people view the church? They view the church as judgmental, hypocritical, creating boundaries between others and God. It seems as a church, we haven't taken the words of Paul all that seriously. I mean, we have coalitions. There are Christian coalitions. You can look this up online in order to determine what right theology is. Yeah, I mean, we haven't moved too far beyond the things that Paul is condemning in the book of Romans. And it's all about who has access to God and who doesn't have access to God. Now, we could talk about the church and we could talk about the fault of the church, but the truth is, the church is an organization. And it's the people within the church that make up the church, that make up the organization. And when I think about my life being part of the church, I realize judging is something that comes so natural for me. Anyone else, you struggle with that too? Am I the only one? It seems like my natural response in life is to judge. It's just like a second nature. I remember in the neighborhood where we used to live, I would go for walks around the block, and there was this house that I would always pass. And it was a broken down house. Totally run down, definitely wasn't being kept up with. Every single time I would walk by this house, immediately, no matter how many times I've seen this house before, immediately I would start judging. What is wrong with the people who live in that house? Why can't they keep up with their house? Why can't they fix the wooden panels that are falling down? Why can't they do some painting? All of a sudden, judgment, being overly critical of the people that lived in the house, it would just fill my heart and crowd out everything that was good in there. And I began to realize, or began to think to myself, why is it that I am just moving right to judgment instead of curiosity? Why, instead of judging them and thinking that there's something wrong with the people living there, why wasn't I asking questions like, is there a health problem going on with the people that live there? Is someone sick? Is someone sick and they're spending all their money trying to keep a husband, a wife, a child healthy, and they have no money left to repair their home? Maybe a spouse had just passed away of someone who was living in the house. Maybe someone living there had lost their job, and they were having a hard time simply putting food on the table. I began thinking, why do I craft this narrative of judgment instead of asking, instead of being human and trying to figure out, is there any way that I can help this family? Is there something going on here that I'm not aware of and they're in need of some compassion? And it made me realize the first step in avoiding judgment is getting curious. And this is true for differences in belief as well. What if, instead of automatically judging another person and moving into a superior position with them in some inferior position, what if we started getting curious about someone else's life? What is it that has shaped their life? What have they been through in life? What have they seen? What's their story? I had a friend, and every time he would meet someone new, he would always ask, tell me your story. Yeah, what if that was our posture? Tell me a bit about your background, your story. What has shaped you? I know it's a pretty personal question, but what are some of the hurts, the pains, the scars? And that might not be, hey, my name's Dave. Tell me about some of the scars that have shaped your life. I don't think that's going to go over too well. But what if we were really curious about another person's life? I mean, we see this with Jesus all the time. Instead of judging, he moved to, I mean, Jesus was a healer. And Jesus had this supernatural way of knowing what it was that we were carrying around within us. But what if we were just to get curious about another person's life and we were able to put a picture together of everything that had shaped them up until that point? And as a result of the hurts, the pains, and that which they've seen in life, the things that they're passionate about, what if we were able to have more compassion and we're able to avoid judgment altogether? I mean, wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be a thing? What if instead of having all these debates and arguments, whether it be in person or on social media, we were able to just have a conversation about someone else's life? Hear their story a bit. I mean, I know for me, it would help me a lot with that judging thing. When I was going to seminary, there was someone that I would just see him, and every time I saw him, I don't know what it was about him, but I would just become more and more judgmental. Then when I got to know him, actually had a conversation with him, he's like one of my best friends. We talk all the time, but there's something about not knowing someone where we're automatically just beginning to judge and condemn and place ourselves in this superior position. So I realized for me, when I begin judging something or someone, there's a question that I have to ask. And it's the question of, what is this judging calling out in me? Because I began to realize when I'm judging someone else, typically what's happening is there's something within me that I'm uncomfortable about. And so as I'm judging someone else, it's making me a bit more comfortable about who I am. I think Richard Rohr says this. He says, we hate our flaws in others. Is that not challenging? We hate our flaws in others. Sometimes there's a sin or there's a way of being in the world that we ourselves are carrying around. And instead of having to be honest about it, having to deal with it, we displace it onto someone else because we see them embodying it. And so instead of us having to actually deal with it, well, now they're the ones who have the problem. You'll see this all the time with preachers. Whenever you see a preacher who's really big on a particular sin or they're really against something, a couple of years later, you come to find out that they're actually struggling with that themselves. And so they're hating it in someone else, in another group, because it makes them feel a little better about themselves. Other times, we see our past in other people. We see where we've been. And it makes us cringe a little bit to ever think that, whoa, I was once back there. Or I was once at the place where they are. And so, you know, we often look back with disdain where we've been in our journey. We kind of cringe a bit about the journey that we've been on. But hey, your journey, it's a great thing. It's carried you to where you are right now. But oftentimes we look back and we think, oh, how could I ever have held that belief? How could I ever have lived in that way? And so when we see someone else embodying it, it makes us cringe a little bit to think, "Who? I can't believe that I was ever like that." Or other times it calls out our inaction. There's something that someone is doing, thinking, believing, and we're really passionate about the thing that they're talking about, the thing that they're embodying, and it reminds us that we're actually not doing something ourselves about it. We're sitting on the couch, and it's calling out that inaction, that we know that there's something that God has placed in our hearts to do, to speak out against, to go and help these people, to get off the couch and to go do something. And when we see someone living a particular way or saying something, it calls out the inaction within ourselves. So oftentimes the judging, it's more about us than it is about them. And I think the other thing, what I've come to realize, the other thing that judging does, what it's calling out in us, it shows us when we're not living under grace. There's a great story by author Brené Brown. And she tells this story about she was going to speak at a conference. And normally, whenever she goes to speak at a conference, the conference will put her up in a hotel room by herself, single room. This time, she was going to be in a room with someone else. She was going to have a roommate. She already despised the fact she was going to have a roommate. When she showed up at the hotel, knocks on the door, her roommate is already there. Opens the door. Her roommate is just lounging out on the couch. She has her, I think it was cowboy boots on the couch, eating some sticky donut, getting glaze all over this couch. And she is disgusted walking into that room. Then when she's going to go say hi to her roommate, and the roommate gets up, wipes her hands on her pants, and then proceeds to shake Brené Brown's hand. She is annoyed. Speaks at the conference, goes home, is still just totally annoyed at the whole situation. She has a session with her therapist in which she's telling the therapist about this encounter, about what's happening, and the therapist asks her a question. She says, "Do you think that your roommate was doing the best that she could in life?" Hey. Immediately, Brené Brown says, "No, of course she's not doing the best that she can in life. Obviously, she could be doing much, much better." And the therapist asks, "Do you think people in general are doing the best that they can in life?" Brené Brown answers, "No, of course not. Everyone can try harder." After a couple days of thinking about it, she comes to the realization, and she does tons of research for her books. And what she came to discover, a brilliant insight, the harder we are on other people. See, when we believe that other people aren't doing the best that they possibly can, we're actually believing the same about ourselves. She said, it's the people who are the most critical of others who are the most critical of themselves. And she came to discover that the people who are who can extend grace to others are the people who she terms as wholehearted, people who are able to extend grace for themselves. See, sometimes when we are passing judgment on other people, it's a sign that we're not being kind to ourselves. We're not being compassionate to ourselves. We're not living in grace ourselves. We're not able to extend forgiveness to ourselves for something. We're not able to be kind for ourselves. So whenever I find myself beginning to judge, it's a sign that I need to get curious about my own life to figure out what's going on here. What am I, what's going on in my soul that I am uncomfortable with that's causing me to now begin judging others? And then here's another question. Why is it that judging is so harmful? Because it is. Why does Paul seem to think, why does he talk about it again and again in Romans? Why is judging so harmful? Obviously, number one, first reason is because it creates disunity. Second, it creates or it places you when you're judging in a position of arrogance. And who likes to be around arrogant people? There's a phrase that people in the church world will often say. And if someone disagrees with them, they'll say, "I'll pray for them." You know what that is? It's a chocolate-covered turd. Sounds great, looks great, but underneath, not so great. Not so great. It's saying, "I know best, we know best." And then another reason why judging is so harmful, it takes you off your path in life. We have limited energy. And when we're expending all of our energy trying to get other people to walk a path that we think they should walk, it gives us no time, no energy left to walk our path. We all have a path in life. We all have a path that God is leading us down. When we are so consumed, so worried, remember Paul's words, keep that between yourself and God. You have your path. You have your life. There's a reason why you're here on this earth. There are some things that you have to do. There are some ways in which you can bring healing to this world. When you're so concerned about them and getting them to walk a certain path, it prevents you from doing the things that you are here to do. So it's so harmful because it takes us off the path that God desires for us to walk in life. And here's what judging frees us to do. Number one, it frees us to love. Paul, earlier in Romans, he goes through all these ways of being in the world. Romans 1, verse 29. They've become filled, talking about a certain group of people, they become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. They're full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. Gossip, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, and boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents. Not only are they doing evil, they're inventing all sorts of new ways of doing evil. And then here's what Paul says. After he goes through this list of all these ways which are obviously contrary to the way of Jesus, that obviously go against the way in which God desires for us to live in the world, here's what he says. You therefore, you have no excuse. You who pass judgment on someone else. Even when people are living against the way in which we all know God desires for us to live, he's still saying, don't pass judgment. You therefore, you have no excuse, for at whatever point you judge the other, people clearly doing evil. At which point, and look, there are certain things that we have to speak out against. There are certain things that are evil. So there comes a point, yes, we must condemn acts of evil. There are certain things in the world that are wrong, and we must take a stand against it. But Paul seems to be saying, don't judge the people living like that, though. Judge certain actions and speak against the actions, but whenever you begin to judge the other, you are condemning yourself because you who pass judgment do the same thing. I mean, is that not profound? It reminds me of this, I love this quote by Nietzsche. He says, beware that when you're fighting monsters, you don't become a monster yourself. Come on. Beware when you're fighting monsters, when you're fighting evil, when you're speaking against things that are contrary to the will of God, that you don't become a monster yourself. So when we move beyond judging, when we live from a place of curiosity and compassion, it frees us to love all people. Words of Jesus, love and pray for your enemies. And not the chocolate-covered turd ways of praying, but pray for all people, even those who you disagree with. And then what it does is it allows you to entrust others to God. Think about the freedom in that. They have their path, and I'm entrusting them to the Spirit. I'm entrusting that there is a living Spirit that's leading all of us. And just like I'm trusting that the Spirit is leading me, I am also relinquishing my need to be the Spirit in their life. Think about the freedom that's found in that. Yeah. So there's a few thoughts on judging. Paul seems to think it's a huge, huge deal. And I think his words of wisdom are words that are just as meaningful for us in this 21st century world that we find ourselves in this morning. Let me pray for us. God, we come to you today. And God, we thank you for this wisdom. God, this ancient wisdom, which is just as relevant for us in our lives. God, I pray for us, God, as followers of Jesus, God, that we would be people who would move from judging others to curiosity, to compassion, to love. God, I pray that we would be people who would show love for everyone. God, that we wouldn't be people who would promote division, but that we would work for peace, for unity. God, I pray for this week, and as we even move beyond this week, whenever we find ourselves judging, whenever we find ourselves moving into a place of superiority over others, God, I pray that your Spirit would speak to us in that moment. God, that we would pause, that we would open ourselves up to your Spirit, that we would ask, what is that judging calling out in us? God, that you would reveal to us anything that we are carrying around with us that needs to be healed. God, that needs to be addressed in our own lives. And God, as we listen, as we hear what that judging is calling out within us, I pray that we would then move into a space of compassion for all people. God, that our first response would be, our first response when we see someone or hear something that we disagree with, our first response would be to have a conversation, to begin a dialogue. And God, I just pray that it would be bathed in love. God, that our posture toward ourselves and toward this world would be one of love. And I pray that as we live in this way, God, as we embody the way of Jesus, the way of love, I pray that the love of Christ, the grace of Christ would flow from us to the world around us. So God, I pray that our lives would be rooted in love and that others would come to see the truth of who you are through our lives, through the love that we have for all people. We pray, God, we ask all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.